You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. We really appreciate you guys listening. We've been checking out the numbers on Libsyn, and it looks like the downloads for each episode keep going up and up each week. And we love seeing that. And if you guys do enjoy these episodes, please give us a rating or review on whatever podcast app you use to listen. Also, we would love if you guys share these episodes with a friend. We want to spread the good word of fitness to all that'll listen. To get into our topics that we'll be talking about on this today's podcast, I'm going to throw it over to the beautiful woman sitting next to me.
Hello.
How you doing, babe?
I'm doing good. So this week I have a really good excitement. Good excitement?
Mm-hmm.
I have a really exciting announcement. We're going to be talking about something that I did. I took the plunge, did something for my fitness. We're going to get more into what that was. Plus, we had a kind of a little research off competition and did a little digging into some articles that interested us that we're going to be talking more about and seeing maybe who got the more interesting article.
Ooh,
it's a competition now.
That's with you. Everything's a competition with you. All right, so first let's go into our training recap for the week. First we're going to talk about the ETT training for the week. We had a lot of great things happen this week with ETT members. We had a couple, one of my members, longtime members, got back to training after a few weeks off.
Always exciting.
Yes, yeah, so both always. Our schedules didn't, you know, he wasn't being negligent on training. Our schedules weren't matching up, so finally got back to training. It was good to work with him. And also, we had a couple clients renew with ETT. Woo-hoo! So they're going to actually be training with ETT for the foreseeable future, which is awesome. And also talked to, she wasn't a client. She was kind of a client, definitely an ETT member.
She's kind of like an ambassador.
Yeah, well, that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Carmen from the Mike Calta Show. Now, this is kind of local talk, so if anybody who's outside of the Tampa Bay area might not be, or it's probably not familiar with this, but the Mike Calta Show is a big radio show, morning show here in the Tampa Bay area, probably number one as what I've heard. And Carmen is kind of the female perspective, the female voice on that show. And last year, right when ETT was kind of starting in the beginning stages, she actually enlisted my help to help her train for a celebrity boxing event that they had organized. And it was great because once I started working with her, I knew how serious she was taking it. And it made everything so much easier. You know, I don't train fighters. That's not what I do. You know, I incorporate proper boxing or striking techniques into each workout. And I have my own, you know, previous history of training and competing.
You used to help train fellow fighters when you were like an amateur fighter.
Right, yes.
But it's not something you're like focused on doing.
Right, exactly. You know, that's not the mission of ETT. I'm familiar with fight training, so that's kind of what I was able to bestow that knowledge onto Carmen. And then we got to go to the event, the Mike Calta's right. Punch Out.
And like she's not like this wasn't training for like a fight, like as in like real fighting. I wouldn't even say this is amateur fighting. I would say that this is comical fighting, like fighting not that serious. I don't know. I'm not trying to downplay it, but I think Carmen was probably the only one that took it seriously.
Yeah, it was more of an entertainment show than an actual sporting event.
Yeah, she did awesome though.
It was definitely there was some a little bit of, I don't want to call it sideshow, but there was a little bit more sideshow-esque episodes.
Fights. A man in a thong with giant boxing gloves on beat up another man, thankfully not in a thong.
Yeah, so like I said, it was more along the entertainment area arena than necessarily sport arena. But luckily, like I said, Carmen, she took it super seriously. She had one, her opponent dropped out a few days before the fight, so she had somebody step in, and it was more of an exhibition boxing match that she ended up winning. Well, the reason why I'm mentioning all of this is because they are doing another Mike Caltas punch out, and Karma,
it's back.
Yeah.
Back again.
And that she enlisted ETT again, once again, to help her train for the next competition that's coming up in a few months. So she's going to start back training again, and she's going to have a lot more time. And we're going to go over some more techniques, too, for her to use in the ring for her competition, because I think it's about a couple months out. So last time she only had a few weeks to train with ETT. Now she has, I think, several months. So she's definitely nice. Going to advance her training, her striking training. So I'm looking forward to working with Carmen once again. But that was kind of the big week of ETT training. What about now we're going to throw it over to you, because I know you have something that you would,
yes.
you're really excited to talk about as far as training.
I'm so excited because we recently were discussing kind of my challenges last week, last week's podcast. This past week, I definitely got back into my training. I had much more consistency. However, I did all at-home workouts. Why? Because my stupid gym had stupid conflicts with classes again, and it was the last straw. I finally just couldn't take it anymore. Last week, we talked about a very beautiful investment, and I took the plunge, and I ordered my Peloton bike. And that is the most exciting thing, because it's probably the biggest thing I think I've done for my own fitness in a long time. Like, I haven't really invested that much beyond, you know, a new pair of shoes here, new, like, clothes, that's it. This I'm so excited about, because this is going to take all of the onus on waiting for a class off and put all the control in my court. Like, this, I will have so many different classes, live classes, pre-recorded, and even just those, like, really visual rides. Like, they have, like, recorded rides from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super excited because I saw ones like the Road to Hana in Maui, and I was like, I'm gonna be biking in Maui next month. So this is huge. Basically calling this an early, extraordinary birthday present for myself, and it should be delivered, fingers crossed, knock on wood, it should be delivered within the next week or so.
Yep, and I've already thought of an idea. You're going to be on the bike for a future podcast.
Oh,
so you're going to be taking us through one of the classes on a future podcast.
Heavy breathing.
A lot
via
of heavy
microphone.
Breathing.
That's exactly what people like
yeah.
to hear.
Or I'll do the play by play over here while you pedal away, you know?
And you'll just randomly interview me at
yeah.
like intervening spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll definitely be posting pictures of the bike when it comes in, and you guys can go. I put a link to it on the last show notes at elementaltampa.com, and you can. There's a really good YouTube video about the Peloton cycle, and then all the, like Shannon mentioned, all the pre-recorded classes or the daily kind of classes that you're connected to right on the bike.
I didn't know this, but apparently you can actually, if you have like a friend that has one of the Peloton bikes, you can actually like almost virtually Skype each other, kind of like you can have a video pop up of your friend and you guys can talk and like work out together.
Wow.
Which is, I'm not sure if it's really creepy or really awesome. I don't have anybody else that I know that's using this bike, so
you make some friends.
I'm just gonna say it's a little creepy, like having just your face sweating profusely. I don't know. I'll get back to you on it.
No, it's a great concept though, because not only does it eliminate the need for, you know, somewhat unreliable gym membership like
yes.
you were dealing with,
so frustrating,
but it also connects more people. And I think kind of stimulates that one of the concepts that ETT always promotes is that, you know, community
yes.
is one of the most important aspects of fitness.
Yep.
You know, having a fitness community that encourages you to, you know, stick to your training regimen is super important.
Well, and I also found out that not only have I been really excited about this, but apparently this has also been, like, really trendy in the upper echelon groups of people. Like, a lot of celebrities have this bike. Oh. Madonna has this bike. I don't know if that's a selling point or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I was like, is that good or bad?
Sofia Vergara has this bike.
Okay, that's
definitely
good.
A selling yeah. point.
So if you could start being Skype friends with Sofia Vergara,
yeah, right.
then this thing is well worth it.
I don't think you can do that, but...
Hey, never say never.
But it's just, it's, you know, the bike, they basically sell you the bike at cost so that you can pay for the membership. Like, that's the way that they make their money.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this freaking kick-ass bike, like the best stationary bike that there is on the market, basically, with this amazing amount of technology. And they have financing available as well, I will say.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's not a cheap thing.
Yeah. So I'm not like sponsoring them or anything, but I'm super interested to put this baby to work.
I think it's a great investment, you know.
Yeah, there's kind of like two or three major groups of things. I feel like you just can't say it's a bad investment, and it's basically anything that enriches your life. So it would be like books. I think it's always just a great investment. I have so many books, and I do not ever think twice about spending money on a book. Fitness, another thing. I just don't think, as long as you're getting the value from it, I just don't think it's a bad investment. And I think, you know, anything that can further educate you, you know, classes, things like that. Those are like three categories of things I just think are so valuable that you kind of don't need to really ever feel guilty about spending money on, as long as you're getting that value.
Mm-hmm.
So I will get back to you on how much value I'm getting out of it, hopefully at the next podcast.
The value thing you bring up is interesting to me because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. There's a lot of gyms being marketed now with extremely low monthly memberships.
Yes.
Like $10,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder how you can sell something for $10 and make a profit.
Yeah.
You know?
And well, those people lean heavily on the idea that, A, not all of those people are actually coming in to use the gym.
Exactly.
A lot of people, and we talked about this last time, like, you really should break down any investments you have into, like, a cost per use to decide whether or not they're actually valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those people sign up for those types of gym, maybe only come in once or twice a month. So they're paying like half the price of what someone's paying to go to like a fancy studio for a class if you're only using it once or twice a month.
Right.
But they're still paying regularly. So that's one way. And the other way is that they're looking for volume. So those types of really low cost gyms are usually also going to be filled with people that are really just looking for like a quick workout. They're not doing classes. They're not doing, you know, serious workouts. Like,
lots of turnover.
There's a lot of turnover in that business, and they're just going for quantity.
Right.
So to be fair, there are I'm sure a lot of people out there that do take advantage and go on a regular basis, but the variety of equipment at those gyms is usually not that extensive. It's pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically paying to have a home gym, not at your home.
Right.
It's really super simple, and it's a great concept, actually, but it's definitely something not suited for everybody, because I don't know what the real motivation, like, I think that there needs to be a lot of motivation for most people, including myself. Like, I need to want to go to a gym. That's one of the reasons I've had sort of love-hate relationships with gyms. And classes have always been incentive and motivation for me to go. But just equipment has never been something that compelled me.
Mm-hmm.
And even working out at home, you have to have a lot of self-discipline to do. So if you really think about it, to go out of your way to go work with basic equipment and that's it at a gym, not in your house, I mean, that it almost seems like you're setting yourself up for kind of failure in a way.
And that's what it worries me, and I don't want to put any kind of nefarious kind of
thoughts out there?
Thoughts for the for those companies.
Yeah.
But it almost seems like they might rely on the fact that most people don't have the knowledge of, first of all, what to do when they go into the gym. Like, they don't know the proper exercise routine or anything like that to achieve results. Or, and they also rely on, I'm sure we can look at statistics of people that buy gym memberships and then, like you said, never use them.
Well, even I went to a very well-known national gym. I just now quit it. I don't have any issue with that gym. They're very corporate, but they're very well organized, I think, overall. I think it would be a fun experiment because, like, we know what that kind of gym is, where you get the nice gym rooms and the lockers and the spa and the pool and all this extra stuff. It actually is. If you use all that stuff, it's an amazing deal.
Absolutely.
But it would be cool to go into one of these other places that we're talking about. I think future experiment in the works. If anybody's interested in us exploring this idea of, like, those really deep discounted gyms, to see what exactly is entailed and have us break down kind of our thoughts on, would this work for somebody that either A, just needs a place to work out, or B, would this be enough motivation for someone that wants to just get really serious about their fitness and go in and give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't know what they offer there. Like I said, they could have classes, they could have...
Yeah, we can see, kind of, like, look at what the options are and do a little bit more deep dive. So let us know if that's something that's of interest, and we will look into it more.
Yeah, that's great.
We have a few around here.
Yeah, there are a couple, and there's a lot of chains, I think, that are kind of popping up nowadays. So that's our training recap for the week.
Woohoo.
And going in now into the news articles that both of us have brought to the table.
Yes.
And first I'm going to let you have the honors, being the lady of the house.
So ironically, the article that I have is a compilation of research. It's actually from cookinglight.com. And I found this via another health and fitness blog that I read regularly. This doesn't sound like it's health and fitness, but popsugar.com is actually a really great source. They have such a high volume of news and articles that they cover that there's usually some really good little nuggets in there. But this was an article, again, just a compilation of different research that they had put together about superfoods. The question being, is there anything to... their superpowers, their so-said superpowers. So I thought this was awesome because we've talked about certain foods that were in this list, this roundup. And I think that there's a really good point to this article that I wanted to raise because I think it's just kind of a good basic tip. So what we'll kind of just really quickly recap, they put together about 13 different superfoods and they broke them down. They looked at the research that is out there to either support or not how super these foods really are, and basically come down, should you be eating this? Should you go out of your way to incorporate this into your regular eating, or is it kind of just a fad or a trend or something that people are just trying to market? So, very interesting topic. And the reason I think this really got my attention is because the first item on the list, I'm only going to go through 6 of the items that they did. But turmeric, you just were talking about this because you started incorporating this. I think you had it on Instagram. We've mentioned it before, how you were including this in your diet because of its anti-inflammatory claims. And there's a lot of claims around that it can relieve GI issues such as indigestion, ulcers. It can prevent and treat certain types of cancer. And it also, since it is an inflammatory disease, like arthritis, it can help. And then even prevent neurological diseases like Alzheimer's, which is where I was peaked. My interest was very peaked. So why can it do all these things? It's because the superpower is a photochemical known as curcumin.
Curcumin.
Curcumin. So the proof, is there any proof that this stuff can actually do the things it's claimed? So basically, yes, curcumin has an anti-inflammatory effect. And preliminary research does actually suggest that it can have a lot of help in reducing heart-related issues, heart disease. It can ease heartburn, which I'm super interested in because my heartburn's been bad lately. It can even slow progression of neurological diseases. However, the total effects on the body aren't really that understood, and there's a lot more research needed to validate those claims. So I think that the end, like, should you eat it or should you skip it? I think it's one of those items that if you like it, if the flavor is something you like and you can incorporate this into your diet, then by all means, it's good. It's been proven that it has positive effects. But is it a miracle cure, or is it, you know, like something that's going to be the super solution? There's still a lot of research needed to understand what it can really do.
Right. And I've heard a couple of, you know, reliable sources comment on that, on the research, new research that they're doing about curcumin. And the issue is trying to find the most bioavailable source. So like Shannon mentioned, curry, you know, obviously there's turmeric in curry. But it's, you might not be able to get all the benefits of the curcumin based on, you know, just eating curry. Mm-hmm. You know, like with us, I bought turmeric root and I incorporated in some like afternoon teas.
Tea.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's supplements made pure of like pure curcumin that are just like mega doses of the beneficial nutrient.
Yeah.
That could have even more of a positive effect.
Yeah, because it's the whole
Yes, thing. It's more bioavailable and it's a massive dose than just, you know, us using the roots or you eating in curry. Yep. So there's different forms of it that have, you know, better effects. The research is showing there's better effects. Yeah. But the pain relieving effects of curcumin are starting to be really promoted, and some studies come out that has more pain relieving effects than something like Tylenol or Advil. Yeah. So
it's one to watch.
Yes, absolutely. So,
and if you like the flavor, definitely one.
Yeah, to enjoy your turmeric.
Enjoy your curry.
All right, what's next?
This one was for you.
All right.
Coconut oil. Dun da da da.
Yep.
So it's super trendy. If you haven't yet guessed or know, it is oil from the coconut. The claims around this suggest that coconut oil can speed up your metabolism and decrease appetite, making it a superfood for weight loss. And granted, this doesn't actually go into like all of the benefits for like your skin and your hair and all the moisturizing things. The reason it's considered the superfood is that it's medium chain triglycerides, which in itself make this different from other oils and fats. That's really like what it comes down to. The actual proof of it doing all of these metabolic impacts and having some kind of weight loss halo, the studies don't necessarily back that up. Most of the claims are based on the fact that it is a medium chain triglyceride, which means that they're broken down and used differently than other forms of oils and fats, like I said. Currently, though, there's not actually a ton of research to back up the claims that eating coconut oil promotes weight loss. So, and I think the end-all be-all of it is that it's one of those items that if you do like coconut flavor, then heck yeah, you should be substituting this for other oils or fats. So it should definitely be in your pantry if you are a coconut flavor lover. The saturated fat in coconut oil does not appear to raise your LDL levels, which is like the bad cholesterol, so super positive. But you do have to remember that this is still a fat, and it has about 120 calories and 13 grams of fat per tablespoon. So Keeping that in mind, if you are looking at, you know, the amount of fats and calories that you're consuming, the this is not one you would just use willy-nilly. This is something that, you know, using it properly in moderation would be a key.
Right. And we're coming out with they're coming out with new nutrition research that's kind of turning a little bit the tables on carb intake and fat intake.
Right. That's a whole different.
Right. But that's kind of, it leads to this conversation because people talk about, you know, limiting your fat intake to a certain number of calories, a portion of your calories. But now they're finding how much more important your fat is to not only energy, but also metabolic functions. And this specifically, the medium chain triglyceride aspect of coconut oil is the fact that it is more easily used by your body than other fats that are long chain triglycerides.
Yep.
They're more stored in fat and in fatty tissue. And that's why if you kind of change your fat intake to more sources like coconut oil that have the medium chain, you're more apt to burn that fat instead of storing it.
Well, I have another fat-related item for you, another superfood for you, and that is fatty fish.
Mmm, fatty fish.
Doesn't that sound appetizing? So what exactly do I mean by fatty fish? It's cold water fish. So these are going to be bigger fish that store more fat, and a large portion of that fat is from omega-3 fatty acids, which if you haven't yet heard about the benefits of, probably been living under a rock. But some examples of this would be tuna, herring, mackerel, trout, salmon, halibut, and whitefish. The claims are that they can lower heart disease risk, reduce incidence of cardiovascular episodes, and some have even suggested that omega-3s may reduce rates of depression and dementia, so having a very positive impact on your brain. The omega-3 fats are the superpower, like I said. And it's kind of funny because we were just talking about like fish oil and how important fat is. And just this has been the topic we've recently been talking about in our own lives.
Right.
But the proof is there's actually numerous studies that document the beneficial cardiovascular efforts. It actually includes lowering blood pressure, reducing arterial inflammation, regulating heartbeat. But there's also research that is so strong that the American Heart Association recommends eating fatty fish twice per week to get the heart protective benefits. So, I mean, that means that this research has been proficient, but it's also been prolific. It's been high volume, high quality. Like, there's very little doubt that this is something that can back up the claims. And there's more research still kind of needed to understand the exact role on the brain chemistry aspect, you know, the depression and dementia type impact. But the end all of this is you should definitely be eating this in your diet. And I had mentioned to you recently, I didn't think that we were eating enough, or at least I was not. And the key really comes down to the best sustainable fish sources of omega-3s are salmon, sardines, which you've recently been eating, striped bass, and rainbow trout. Fresh and canned are actually both good sources. The trick is, like, you see the fish oil supplements out there, but there's a lot of minerals and vitamins and protein and things that come in the fish form that you don't get in the fish oil supplements.
Right.
And that's really kind of the question of, you really should be working to get this into your diet as the fish. And yes, the supplements are good for you, but getting it in the whole form is so much better.
Right. You should use the supplements as a complement to eating the whole, the wholesome food, not as a replacement.
Yes, perfect.
And that's a good advice. And fish is delicious. So if you don't like it, come on.
So now I'm like, oh man, I really need to work harder to get it in there because, but we'll run through the last two I have really quickly. Blueberries, which I freaking love, and it's blueberry season. Hello. So I thought it would be super great.
Very appropriate.
It's very appropriate indeed.
Oh, how
Oh my gosh!
How dare you do puns without running it by me?
So, berries in general, especially really colorful berries, are very high nutrient, have a very high nutrient density, and they have a combination of phytochemicals. So when they call these suckers superfoods, they're calling them superfoods for good reason, actually. The elements in blueberries include phytochemicals like, oh, this is going to get complicated.
Yeah, say it, go it.
Anthocyanins?
Cyanes, I believe.
Cyanes, flavonoids, and
resveratrol. Same thing that's in
resveratrol.
That's in red wine.
Nice. Mm-hmm. It's another way to get your berries. So the claims around this is that they lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and dementia, which is you're talking about your brain, your body, and your heart. That's a lot. Is there actual studies that support it? In fact, there are. And actually anything that's also deeply colored purple red, any vegetables or fruits, have similar studies that say they can reduce heart disease and cancer risk, as well as possibly slow memory loss. So, conclusion, definitely eat them fresh, frozen, dried. And the recommendation is really to get them in your diet daily.
Mm-hmm. Berries are a great fruit, especially anybody, for anyone, even if you're, you know, you're trying to lose weight and worried about, you know, the fruit sugar. Yeah. You still, I say, eat your berries because they're low on the glycemic load and they have all the health benefits. So including berries in your diet for everyone's a great idea.
Especially this time of year when they are fresh, 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 and you can get them. Try to get them, if you can, find them either locally sourced, especially if you can find them organic, because blueberries are really hard to find organic because they're so delectable. Birds love them. But because you eat the skins on them, if you don't wash them really well, you're going to end up with some of those chemicals. So try to get one that has the least amount of chemicals on them as possible to really make sure you're maximizing your health benefits with them. But I have so many happy memories from blueberry picking. It's like one of my favorite times of year. Last item we're going to talk about, there are more items on this list. Like I mentioned, some are also very interesting. We'll leave the link to the article in the show notes so that you can check out the other items. But wheatgrass I thought was really interesting because I, like so many people, have thought, oh my gosh, like I really should just do a wheatgrass shot because like it's a superfood and it's supposed to be amazing. So what exactly is it? It's just young grass sprouted in water, and you can purchase it either like as the grass, you can get it raw, you can even get it dried in powder, capsule, or liquid forms. You can find this, I think, like in most grocery stores now. Mm-hmm. It's not even just health food stores. The claims is that it helps improve circulation, regulate your blood glucose, reduce inflammation, and detoxify your body. And the super elements is that it really is like high nutrient. There's vitamin A, vitamin C, several B vitamins, and it has chlorophyll in it. So those are all definitely healthy components. However, the research does not really back up a lot of what they're claiming this is. And there's actually no data that suggests it's healthier than other fruits and vegetables, especially those containing similar vitamins. So is it a vitamin-packed vegetable? Yes, but a lot of other vitamin-packed vegetables out there that compare. This is not technically more super than others out there. So in conclusion, it's not that super, and unless you love yourself some wheatgrass shots,
right,
it's not really anything you have to worry about adding. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
There you go.
So that is my research. Boom.
Boom. Close the book. Yeah. Drop the mic. All right. We're going to go over my article that I found and I'm bringing to the table. Right. And this is actually the article I'm specifically looking at is NBC News from May 24th, 2016, from their health tab, under their health tab. And it says, obesity surgery is a good way to treat diabetes, groups agree. This article is mainly kind of was spawned off that the several diabetes organizations worldwide came to the conclusion that gastric surgery, or, you know, they call it metabolic surgery, specifically gastric bypass surgery, is probably one of the most effective ways to treat type 2 diabetes. For all of those that are not aware what gastric bypass it is, they essentially...
Stomach stapling.
Yes, they staple and basically they make your stomach smaller. So they staple a portion of your stomach to make it smaller, to hold less food, and then they attach the small intestine to that part of the stomach so that it bypasses the rest of your stomach. I don't know what percentage-wise, I've just seen illustrations, but it looks like maybe 10 to 20% of its original capacity they reduce it to.
Yeah.
So basically they're rerouting your anatomy to kind of make you eat less food.
Yeah, they're basically reducing your capacity mm-hmm. for food.
Yes.
So you're not actually able, and you've heard horror stories of people like busting their staples because they tried to overeat still.
Yeah, I'm sure those stories exist. I don't know how true they are, but we both know individuals that have had, I don't know about this specific surgery, but, you know, have had this and have good results.
Yes.
And the thing that's really, this has been recommended people that are severely obese. I'm talking about 35 BMI and higher. And for all of you who don't know what BMI is, you know, body mass index is a way kind of they measure obesity and, you know, overweight, or, you know, a good weight or a appropriate weight. So
I think most people know it and hate it, but yeah.
Right. And for you guys that don't know, the way you calculate it, you know, here for non-metric units is you do your weight divided by your height squared. So your height in inches, you know, multiplied by itself. And you multiply that by 703, and that'll give you your BMI. So my BMI is around 22, 23, based on my height and weight. The interesting thing about this article is that they are now recommending the surgery for people that have relatively, they category it as low obesity. So obesity on the BMI scale starts from 30. Right when your BMI is at 30. And for that, to give you a little frame of reference, individual that's 5'11", no, excuse me, 5'10", which I think is the average height for males, 5'10", and if you weigh 210, your BMI is 30. So 210 pounds at 5'10", you are considered obese. All right. So they are now saying that people that have the kind of the low level obesity, 30 to 34.9, which is the low level of for the BMI index, they are recommending, they believe that the gastric bypass surgery is the most effective way to treat type 2 diabetes and obesity.
Wow.
I have mixed feelings about this.
Have we gotten to the discussion portion of this? Because I have an opinion on this.
Right. I have mixed feelings about this because type 2 diabetes is kind of an acquired, I shouldn't say kind of, specifically the weight-related one, for the obesity-related one, is an acquired disease.
Yes.
There are different forms of type 2 diabetes that are not weight-related. But the one that I think is common, most people commonly know about, is the fact that due to obesity, your body, your cells have become insulin resistant, you know. The reason I have mixed feelings about this is that you can change this through lifestyle changes. It has been proven that type 2 diabetes can be changed through, you know, changing your diet. Essentially, changing your diet altogether. Insulin, also, you have to take insulin injections, but you can cure type 2 diabetes with lifestyle changes.
You can treat it.
Yeah, well, you can cure it. You can reverse type 2 diabetes with lifestyle changes. But it's not the easy way. Oh, well, I say quote-unquote easy way. It's hard because you have to maintain that lifestyle for the rest of your life, or you can have the detrimental effects that are associated with type 2 diabetes like, you know, stroke, heart disease, heart attacks, mm-hmm. things of that nature. You know, and you hear about a lot with people that could have, that have blindness and amputations due to diabetes. So I'm mixed because I feel like changing your anatomy for something that you could change by simply changing your lifestyle, it seems it's a tough choice. But I understand how tough obesity can be.
Yeah.
You know, I was up in that 30 BMI at one point in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, luckily I was smart enough, or I shouldn't say smart, because that's, I don't want to say, I don't think people that have, that are obese are stupid. That is not what I want to try to convey. I was lucky enough, really, to kind of, and I had the fortitude to change my lifestyle and get my BMI down to the healthy level that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's not that easy for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to hear your opinion, because you said you have an opinion based on this.
Yeah, I have an opinion on this particular article, because I, as we talked about, I've known people that have had this procedure after years and years of battling with their weight, and they tried fad diets. Like, in fact, most of my growing up with these people were them on diets. Every time I would see them, like, they were trying some new diet, they were trying some new weight management, lifestyle, something. I mean, they literally tried everything. And nothing was, like, they couldn't incorporate any of it into their lifestyle, and they just couldn't get anything to stick. Now, I also, we've talked about it, but we've talked about that it's not just a diet, it's a lifestyle. It includes a lot of different components, not just being more active and eating healthier, that I think possibly this person, like, their job and the stresses in their life, it just didn't allow them to make changes that stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up having this procedure done, and the next time I saw her, like, I had since moved away, and the next time I saw her, she had lost all this weight. But I did hear that the changes she had to make to eat less, I mean, she was on, like, a liquid diet for a long portion of time, and it was not an easy thing. By no means is this gastric bypass or this idea at all, it's not easy. Like, you're having surgery, you're changing your body's anatomy. It is a complicated process. People that do not adhere to the recovery and lifestyle changes, they can actually, you know, bust their staples and get into major health issues because of that. So it's so important to follow that. You're basically forced into a more positive, you know, consumption of food. You just don't have the choice to do otherwise. And I understand why that is important for some people. But I think making this a recommendation for type 2 diabetes for people that are on the lower BMI, I myself am very near the lower BMI for people that are considered obese. I don't look obese. I think BMI is kind of a bullshit measurement, to be honest. It doesn't take into there's certain things into consideration that I feel like it should. It's just a weight calculation. If you happen to be a dense person like me, I've always been, like, just mass-wise denser. It's completely inaccurate. So for someone like me, I feel like that it's kind of just not fair. Like, yes, they can learn the same things. They can learn the same management tools to help improve their diet and everything. I feel like in a way, unless you have immediate health concerns, though, this is not a surgery that should just be recommended as a treatment, especially if, like, your weight is somewhat on that line, you know? Like, I definitely understand for critically obese people, for people with a disease like type 2 diabetes, but if you're on the line, all of a sudden this is just going to be the go-to treatment?
Yeah, I don't know if that's what the article kind of presents. I wouldn't say it presents it that way, but it's just the new kind of the newest update that this is why it's kind of, it's very surprising that they lowered that BMI window from, because it used to be everybody 35 and above, and then especially people that had, you know, type 2 diabetes or obesity related diseases, some sort of metabolic syndrome. But now that they lowered it down to 30 to 34.9, you know, that scale with people, and then people also have to have the type 2 diabetes, they believe the most efficient way to reverse it is the surgery opposed to lifestyle changes.
I guess if it comes down to the absolute numbers of it, I get what they're saying. I like worry about what studies like this will do to people that are just looking for the easy way and that aren't then going to be teaching their kids, you know, the proper way to not get type 2 diabetes. And, oh, well, if you get it, don't worry. You can just go get your stomach stapled.
Yeah, that when I saw that was kind of my first kind of...
It doesn't teach people anything. It's just a fix.
Right. That's why it's an epidemic. I mean, I looked at the stats. It's over 400 million worldwide have type 2 diabetes, and they think that's a lowball number because a lot of... There are people that don't know they have it.
Right.
You know? So... They're trying to, I mean, I understand the medical's, you know, the medical side, because they're trying to find something to reverse this epidemic.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're trying to, and that's kind of the feelings I've had at first was, you know, you're kind of almost justifying the health choices they're making.
Right.
But
how you got there, like, you're not really taking any ownership of the reason you got there necessarily. You're not learning really the impact and then how you correct that. I would say as like, if you've tried the other things and this is your only other option to being healthy, then, and especially I guess when it comes to diabetes, it is a life threatening, it's a life threatening disease. So if you've tried to do it the other ways, then yes, this would make sense. And the fact that they say it is the best fix, awesome. We're not trying to debate that, but there's a certain amount in just human brain that if you don't teach them the right way to do something, you don't teach them the cause and the effect, not only can they risk to reverting, but they can risk to kind of not being able to teach, you know, future generations or other people the right way to prevent it in the first place.
Right. I mean, along with adult diabetes.
You're just fixing the end result. You're not actually preventing it, which gets me up in arms is you're not doing anything to prevent it for future. You're just trying to fix your current problem.
Right. I don't know enough about the, you know, the ADA, the American Diabetes Association, what kind of efforts they're doing to, in far as prevention. But I think the standard American diet that has been kind of promoted for the last 30 years didn't help.
Yeah.
This, you know, the stats, the numbers we have for diabetes now.
Yeah.
And so I think we're slowly learning more and more about nutrition and how the body processes foods each and every day. So I think we're gonna get there, That's why I see this article and I see this kind of proclamation, well, how this, you know, surgery is kind of the most effective treatment, and I see that it's merits from both sides of how, you know, how can you say, you know, how can you revert to surgery when you can just change lifestyle choices, but
it's not that easy to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right now it's an epidemic that we have to kind of stifle some way, somehow, in order to save people's lives. Yeah, I think one way to kind of educate yourself on it is start looking at some information on which foods create the most insulin response in your body.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of related to the glycemic index and things like that. But I think we're going to wrap it up for today. This is a little longer episode.
This is a long one.
Yeah, we rambled a lot. We had a lot of opinions on the news stories.
Maybe we should stick with just one news story moving forward.
That's true.
Apparently, two was a lot. We have a lot of opinions.
Right. So, and they were both kind of different perspectives. You know, so we went on different kind of talks, you know, different opinions on each one. So But I thought it was great. So hopefully you guys thought it was great too. Like I mentioned in the beginning, please rate, review, and share this podcast. All our show notes go up on elementaltampa.com to kind of elaborate a little bit more on anything we mentioned during the podcast. So you guys check that out. And also, I want to mention a couple more things before we end today's episode. I know. But next week, we should be all things go well, everything, stick to the prior schedule. We should have an interview with the author of a new cookbook that's coming up, a healthy cookbook. So we should have an interview with her. Also, ETT is going to a charity event for a yoga session. I know I mentioned it last week, so please check that out. More information about that's at the Elemental Training Tampa Facebook page. So you guys can check that out there. If you're in the Tampa Bay area, please come with us. I think we got all the information they're willing to hear this week.
Yes, thank you so much. If you've lasted this long, thank you so much for making it to the end. And we look forward to discussing new things with you next time.
All right, that's it, folks. Thanks for joining us on this week's edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. We'll check you next time.
Bye.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks. All right, here we go. Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted...